from KALW News in San Francisco. This is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Noe Valley, San Francisco.
DuBose Triangle, Lower Haight.
Visitation Valley.
Downtown San Francisco.
Oh, Ingleside, SF.
Coming up, we're looking for love and personal chemistry at a Muslim singles event.
Obviously, we don't have like bars that we can go to and meet Muslim guys. And it's nice that it's more organized, so you're meeting people who only are interested in getting married and not just, you know, having a good time.
Then we hear about a struggle for love that stemmed from the struggle for civil rights.
We were young and in love. And love conquers all.
And we tour a special concert where people chant from the heart. The sounds of love. That's today on Cross Currents. Finding a life companion can sometimes be easy, like when you meet someone at work, or school, or at an event. But more often than not, it's hard, especially when you come from a conservative culture where arranged marriages and parent involvement in choosing a spouse are common. 63% of Muslims in America are first-generation immigrants. They come with strong value sets that are not very compatible with the American dating scene. So one solution that mixes the traditional and American worlds of courtship, something called a matrimonial event. Often set up by parents, singles meet, they talk, they play games, all in the same room, at the same time, with the hopes of meeting that special someone. KALW's Hana Baba went to a recent one in Santa Clara to see how it works and see if anyone got lucky. And a note to our listeners, for the sake of their privacy, some of the names in this story have been changed.
It's a Saturday afternoon, and about 80 young men and women, sharply dressed, fill a room decorated with purple decor, red roses, and scented candles. They've come from all around California, and love is in the air. Maybe.
My name is Ali Ardikani, otherwise known as Baba Ali, and I am a person who helps people get married.
Ali is a comedian and the founder of this event called Half Our Deen, a name taken from the Islamic principle that when you marry, you fulfilled 50% of your religious duties in life. Ali was inspired to start the matchmaking company and website with the same name based on his own experience searching for a wife 11 years ago.
I did the unthinkable. I went online.
That online search brought back 17 compatible candidates. So which one is the one? To figure that out, he formulated a way to sift through them. He said,
I'm going to email everybody a series of questions that don't have right or wrong answers. And of the 17 people, 16 answered it one way, one answered the other way. That's the girl I married 11 years ago, and I still feel like a newlywed today.
The people in the room are hoping for similar luck. I go up to one long-haired, cheery young lady we will call Samira. Like many here, family played a role in her coming.
My dad forwarded me the email, so I kind of didn't have a choice. I had to.
This event doesn't have any parents present, setting it apart from the majority of other Muslim singles events, where moms and dads are invited and sit on the sidelines, keeping a close eye on the action. Samira is in her late 20s and a singles event regular. She's been to three of them in the last 5 years.
I went to one at ISNA, you know, the Muslim convention in Chicago. So I went to one of those, and then I did one in San Ramon a couple of years ago, and I didn't feel like I belonged.
This time, she's hopeful but cautious. She likes the informal setting.
Obviously, we don't have like bars that we can go to and meet Muslim guys, so it's just through friends. And it's nice that it's more organized, so you're meeting people who only are interested in getting married and not just, you know, having a good time.
At her table, there are three other women and four men, an uncommon sight at most Muslim gatherings where the sexes sit separately. They start with an icebreaker. There's a piece of paper on the table that has 10 questions on it. Each person answers them. Samira asks one.
Okay. I love reading, so I'm going to ask. The last thing I read was, I read an article on, like, the Vatican and the, I guess there was some fallouts on people in the Vatican and amongst the Pope.
I read something related to IT. I needed that for my work, so I was updating myself.
I'm just about to finish Steve Jobs by Walter Isaacson or something. I forgot the author's name. But it's Steve Jobs' biography.
At another table, the question is, if you weren't here now, where would you be? It's a chance to share interests.
If I wasn't here right now, I would probably be playing a game of tennis.
Table tennis, all right. You play here?
Not table tennis, a game of tennis.
Oh, game of tennis, okay.
As I roam the tables, I realize the questions are indeed serving their purpose. The conversation is flowing. Laughs and a warm buzz of intimacy builds up in the room.
Well, I'm Afghan by background.
Like, okay.
So for us, there's like God, and then there's doctors, and there's everybody else.
Yeah, that's like all of us. Yeah. That's like Pakistanis.
What, are you Pakistani?
Yeah.
Oh, no way.
I notice one lady standing alone in the back. We'll call her Maryam. She looks around the room skeptically.
Honestly, I feel odd. I don't like being in a group setting and I have to express myself. It just seems weird to me. When you have like 7 people to a table, it just feels kind of like, you know, lights, camera.
And no action, for Maryam at least. So let's go across the room and check in with Samira. Has she found a promising beau?
Not so far, yeah. Because I feel like I'm looking for someone who's definitely American and someone who's like me. Like, if I wanted to find someone from back home, that's easy to do. I don't need to come to it. Like, you know, Pakistan, Middle East, whatever. So I'm definitely looking for someone who's born and raised here. And so that's at least maybe less than half of the percentage of the people here.
3 hours into it, it seems to me this is a good way to meet people, but not necessarily to find the one. Then I see this man fidgeting nervously in a corner. He's a recent Egyptian immigrant. We'll call him Tamir. I walk over to him.
I actually found a very nice match, but I don't know if the other side would also would like to date or I don't know.
He is a nervous wreck, sweating and cheeks flushed. Someone has touched his heart.
So there's one that you think...
Yeah, there's only one actually in the room.
Jackpot.
What's next?
I talk and then you put your preference. If she put the same preference, then you meet and you date and you decide.
Yella, what made you pick her? Why did you feel that she was the one?
Chemistry and education and everything, you know.
Okay, so you're going to take it to the next step with her?
Yeah.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
And off he walks slowly towards her, hoping she feels the same way about him. Even a matchmaker can't save you from the uncertainty of love. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
According to Ali Ardakani of Half Our Deen, that event resulted in 20 matches. So how did you find your special one? Or if you're looking, where? Share your love story on our feedback line. It's 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. We'd love to hear about it. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney. Finding the one can be as simple as love at first sight, or it can be a drawn-out process that can take years. And sometimes society can be working against it. And that brings us to your stories. This is San Francisco StoryCorps. When Horace Alexander came back from fighting in World War II, he wanted to get married. And wouldn't you know it, he went to college in L.A. to get his MRS. He met a girl named Jenny, and they fell in love. But there was one problem. He was black, and Jenny was white. Horace Alexander, who was 83 years old at the time of this interview, tells what it was like to have a forbidden love in this edition of StoryCorps Griot from our archives.
It was against the law in California for white people and black people, or people of any different races, to get married in the state. How we got together and how we transcended that is that we were young and in love. And love conquers all. And so we decided that it may be against the law, but it's not against our instincts as human beings to love and to get married as all other human beings. And so that was my first challenge for what I had fought for in the war, my right of free choice and association, along with free speech, which I fought for, which were among the central themes of that war for liberation and against authoritarianism. And so, therefore, what Jenny and I did is we wrote to the offices in every state asking about where we'd get married, telling them we were a black person or a white person. And we got back one letter from New Mexico, the state of New Mexico, saying that we don't have any segregation laws on our books here, so come on and get married if you want to. They asked us one question, are you human? We said yes.
That was Horace Alexander. If you have someone you'd like to interview in the San Francisco StoryCorps booth, we'll show you how at kalw.org.
And I don't even give a care. I feel like the world is turning on me. My dreams turn to ashes right in front of me.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney. Now it's time for Audiophiles, our series of conversations with the most creative people working with sound.
You hear that?
Can you hear me?
It's incredible.
You might be wondering what that sound is. Here's a hint. It's the sound hearts would make if they could sing. Let me explain. This was recorded as part of the Garden of Memory experimental music concert, which happens every summer solstice in the most peculiar of places, the Chapel of the Chimes Columbarium in Oakland. It's a historic building designed by the great architect Julia Morgan in the 1920s. It's built sort of like a maze, and it contains thousands of urns with people's remains. During this concert, this place for honoring the deceased comes alive with dozens of experimental musicians and hundreds of visitors from all over the Bay Area. What's it like to be at a gathering of audiophiles in such a unique space? KALW's Martina Castro and Seth Samuel were there, and they brought back this sonic portrait of the Garden of Memory.
Okay, first off, Seth, I think we should tell people how this music festival found its way into a resting place for the dead.
Yes, let's do that.
It turns out that it all started with a bathroom.
I was writing a story for the East Bay Express about best bathrooms of the East Bay.
That's experimental pianist Sarah Cahill.
She's got a show on KALW.
That's right. It's called Then and Now on Sunday nights. Sarah wanted to see what the bathroom at the Chapel of the Chimes was like.
For her story about bathrooms.
That's right. It's actually supposed to be quite nice. So about 15 years ago, she wandered into the columbarium.
I heard some music coming from somewhere in the building, and it was a very, I have to say, sensuous experience wandering around thinking, oh, it's this way, and making a turn and then encountering a little, you know, cage of lovebirds and a little fountain and a pool. And I thought, oh, my God, what is this place?
So that question led to the creation of the Garden of Memory concert. It's kind of an experimental music festival.
And wandering is key to experiencing this festival. We went with a bunch of KALW people, actually, and we lost each other immediately. Because there was no direction or order to the event. People just followed their ears toward echoing sounds all around them.
We followed some familiar sounds.
And also some that were less familiar.
That was a man playing a trumpet. And had certain tubes connected to different notes in the trumpet so that the tubes would make those separate notes come out of different parts of... I don't know how to explain what I just saw.
Now remember, we're not in a concert hall or a conservatory. We're in a columbarium.
That's right. We're walking around in and out of rooms with names like Benevolence, Court of Quietude, and Garden of Eternal Wisdom.
Some urns look like books or works of art. It gives the impression of being in a library.
The walls are covered in perfect squares. Each is etched with a name and set of dates. And each square leads to the remains of a real person.
David T. Turnbull, 1855 to 1932. Ellen A. Turnbull, 1858 to 1935.
And for the Garden of Memory concert, the Turnbulls are joined by musicians.
Everywhere.
I love how much discovery there is in the building that everyone's wandering through, and it's low commitment.
Eli Warchafter is a violinist, and he's one of the younger musicians here.
He says it's rare to see such a diverse crowd at a new music concert.
Often people are afraid to come in and listen to new music. What's it going to be? People can discover it's quite wonderful.
And experiencing it in what's basically a mausoleum really makes it more profound in a way. But Seth, you know, you and I kept getting separated.
I know, and it was kind of scary.
It was! But at one point we found each other at this installation where sound artist Larney Fox wasn't playing a traditional instrument.
Yeah, it was like this massive, strange guitar-slash-music-box thing.
Bigger than a person.
Yeah, way, way bigger. There were strings pulled tight across the floor, and a series of motors were spinning feathers at various rates to pluck those strings.
The plucking and the motors turning are what's making this oceanic heartbeat of a sound. Remember when you asked Larney this question?
What would you say is more important, how it looks or how it sounds?
I don't know. Would you rather be deaf or blind? You know?
Blind.
Yeah, I guess radio people would, huh?
Yep.
Well, I found his actual answer to be quite interesting.
Let's see, how it looks or how it sounds. What's important is the relationship between the two. For me, this is it's very easy to look at what's happening and see how the sound is generated. And that's not true with a lot of new music. There's a lot of things where there's just somebody sitting with a computer. They're creating something live, but you have no idea how it's happening. I really like the materiality of it.
Exploring the relationship of how this all looks and sounds is exactly what Garden of Memory is about. Which brings us to the part of the night where you, Seth, took me to my favorite sound.
Have you been upstairs?
No.
There is something amazing.
Let's go.
Upstairs that I think is going to be, it's going to blow your mind.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
Oh my God, you were so excited.
I know. Well, can you describe where you took me?
Yeah, so the sound was coming from the top floor atrium where a group of people were in a circle and they were singing. They had their right hands on their hearts and their left hands were on the backs of the people next to them.
It's called the Heart Chant, and it's by experimental composer Pauline Oliveros. Members of the Cornelius Cardew Choir, based here in the Bay Area, were mixed in with regular people who came in and out of the circle without ever breaking the sustained chant. Jed Holtzman, one of the choir members, explained it to me.
Right now there's about 22 people doing the heart chant, and the vast majority of those people just walked up and read the instructions, which are very simple. Basically to think about healing yourself in the world and basically make breath tones, which is to sing any tone on your breath with the syllable ah.
People in the circle looked transfixed. I didn't want to get in the way, but Jed motioned for me to get in the middle of the circle with my big microphone. It was like entering audio recording heaven.
What happens over the course of a couple of minutes is that you start to actually listen with your body.
That's my colleague Casey Miner, who took part in the heart chant for almost 20 minutes.
You're drawing your tune from the people around you, whether that's a harmony or note you're singing in unison, and your breath rises and falls with theirs, and it almost feels like the music swells or falls according to when one person moves in or out of the circle and takes a deep breath and begins singing again. It's very beautiful.
The bells.
Yeah, the bells. They signal the end of the night. And just like that, this magical excursion came to an end.
People seemed pretty euphoric as they emerged from the Chapel of the Chimes.
Yeah, except maybe Ron Banks.
It was the first time and was kind of surprised.
He came from Sunnyvale to hear his son-in-law play. I found him sitting on a bench outside and asked him what he had expected coming in.
Basic music? This was just different for me.
Yeah, so you wouldn't say that you listen to what they call new music.
Yeah, no, it was interesting, and I'd recommend it, even for people like me who just, you know, like Frank Sinatra.
It's sort of like an invention that sometimes it works, but with a slightly different combination, it doesn't work.
Again, that's pianist Sarah Cahill, who founded Garden of Memory. She says the magic of the night is not in the sounds or the musicians, the audience or the place, not even the date of the festival. It's a combination of all those things.
And you wouldn't want to hear the experimental music somewhere else necessarily. You wouldn't seek that out. But it just strikes you the right way and you want to sit and listen.
That's pianist Sarah Cahill, and we were guided through the Garden of Memory by KALW's Martina Castro and Seth Samuel. The Garden of Memory concert is put together by New Music Bay Area and Lifemark Group Arts. You can see photos and video from the concert at KALW.org. And if you're curious to hear what the Heart Chant sounds like with 300 people doing it, check this out, recorded at our second annual Live Cross Currents. You can hear a full minute of that recording at KALW.org. Thanks to our amazing audience for taking part. And before we leave you today, we want to share the story behind a particular sound that we've been playing all week on KALW.
Hi, how are you?
We call it Kanom Babin. People love it. They have their own names for it and everything. They call it Coconut Heavens. They call it White Balls.
Can I have 8 tokens?
It's part of our new project, Audiograph, in which we record sounds from around the Bay, the signature sounds of our area. We asked you what you think it is and where in the Bay Area it's from. KALW's Alyssa Kapnick brings us today's answer.
Hi, my name is Yvonne Lin, and I live in Berkeley. We're at the Thai Temple, which is also in Berkeley. It's not a restaurant. It's kind of just like the feeling of a festival, really, where you sit down and you just get food and there's people talking and it's outside.
So. My name is Nalimun Norman. Krok is one of Thailand's street food, and this is made with rice flour, coconut milk, sugar, and chives. And we've been adding other flavor like cinnamon and mango. And this one is we call it Kanom Babin. It's fried taro. It has taro, coconut flakes, brown sugar mix in there, and it's fried on this big pan back there. And people love it. It's they have their own names for it and everything. They call it Coconut Heavens. They call it White Balls.
The first person to call in and get it right was Emily Urey. We'll be sending her a KALW gift. And for the rest of you, there'll be another contest next week. In the meantime, visit our Facebook page, We're KALW, to hear more from Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. And speaking of sibilant sonic signatures, happy Year of the Snake! If you want to hear more sounds from Chinese New Year, check out the Lunar New Year Festival this Saturday in Oakland's Chinatown. It's happening at the Oakland Asian Cultural Center from 11 to 4:30. There's more info on our website, kalw.org. And that does it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Hannah Baba, Audrey Dilling, Panina Eilberg-Schwartz, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Alex Kaminsky, Erica Mu, Stephen Short, RJ Sloan, and Christine Stelakis. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Thanks to City Carshare, which provides an alternative transportation option for our reporters. City Carshare is online at citycarshare.org. And thank you. We are listener-supported radio. And as somebody might have reminded you already, today is Valentine's Day, all candy and flowers. If you want an antidote, though, to all that sweetness, drop down to the 924 Gilman Club in Berkeley on Saturday and have a listen to Hear the Sirens, who you're hearing now. Doors open at 7 p.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Trefney.
Making these announcements to put to rest the notion that large marijuana businesses can shelter themselves under state law and operate without fear of federal enforcement.
The federal government needs to spend its resources elsewhere.
I'm Stephen Short. My online cannabis news roundup helps keep you informed about the state's growing and controversial medical marijuana industry. Search Cannabis News Roundup under the News tab at kalw.org.